Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on August 13th, 2020, and is current through the Star Trek Lower Decks episode Envoys, so beware of spoilers. Though, as I did last week, given Lower Decks is only available in North America right now, I will be noting in the episode description the time codes for any Lower Decks discussion, so you can skip over it if you choose. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 6 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone. And my guest this week is returning guest, Homer Frizzell. Homer, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be back. I'm excited to talk about the news this week.
All right, Homer. Well, I want to know something that's got you feeling excited about Star Trek this week. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
So we didn't have Star Trek for a little while. It seemed like a long time after Picard got done and Lower Decks started up. And now every Thursday I have Lower Decks to look forward to. So that has got me excited. And I don't want spoilers. So what I do is I watch it as soon as I can. And that means I can watch it a couple, three times during the day, which isn't a bad thing.
So are you one of the people who wakes up overnight for the 3 a.m. Eastern time release of the episode?
I'm not that guy, but I am the squeeze it in, maybe watch it at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Got it. Yeah, between morning calls, right?
Yeah, because until then, I avoid Twitter. I avoid Facebook. I don't want to read a single word about it. I don't want to see someone say, you're going to like this. No. I don't even want that.
Yeah, my experience for Lower Decks has been a little different because I'm writing the reviews for Trek Corps for this season. I get access to the shows a little bit in advance in order to be able to write the review so it's up in time. But for Picard, I was not one of the people who waited up until 3 a.m. to watch it, but I did go to bed the night before and I was normally up around 4 or 5 a.m. in order to watch the episode and then went back to sleep afterwards because, like you, Homer, I can't keep myself off of the internet, but I really don't want to be spoiled on it. So I figured the only conclusion was just wake up really early and watch it. And as you say, then you have the whole rest of the day to enjoy it again and again and again. And in the case of the Star Trek Picard series premiere Remembrance, that was 9 times over the course of one day for me, which was, I think, a new record.
Wow. That's dedication. Nice.
It sure is. Well, much like you, I'm also very excited for what is now 21 weeks of Star Trek that lie ahead of us. But I have to say, I did particularly enjoy this week's episode of Lower Decks Envoys. I thought the first episode, obviously talked about this last week with Thad, but I really enjoyed the pilot, but I really, really enjoyed the sophomore episode of the season. It feels like the show is already finding its groove and its comfort zone. And there are just so many little things about it that really resonated with me. There is one big moment that I wasn't a massive fan of, and you can trot on over to trekcore.com and read my review there to get a better insight into the one part of the episode that didn't work for me. But other than that, the whole thing I thought was utterly delightful, both the A and B stories, just chock full of references, chock full of heart, and so very Star Trek.
I'm curious now. I will go over there and check that out.
What did you think about the second episode?
So I have enjoyed both episodes. The second one, I was like, I knew that it was going to be like this setup just because she was kind of playing along so much in what if it, the equivalent of 10 forward and letting him have his moment. So I enjoyed it. I liked the Klingons and the fact that these guys can throw knives and they can, you don't have the limitations that you have in a live action show, let's say. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I don't usually laugh during a show, but I did laugh once during the first episode.
Absolutely. Watching comedy by yourself, I tend not to laugh out loud very much, but I have so far several times at this show, which I'm really pleased by.
Yeah, you'll appreciate this, I think. I have laughed out loud watching Red Dwarf occasionally.
Yeah, that show will do it to you for sure.
Yep, indeed.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So top story this week is an interview between Alex Kurtzman and the trade blog Gold Derby about the Emmy nomination received by Star Trek Short Treks for Outstanding Short Form Comedy or Drama. And in the interview, Alex Kurtzman gave us a quick but wide-ranging update on the status of production on all the Star Trek shows. He said of the current status of production that we've been running all of our writers' rooms on Zoom. The silver lining is that we've actually been able to get quite ahead on scripts for upcoming seasons of Discovery and Picard and Strange New Worlds, which is going to be shooting next year, and Section 31. A couple of things there that catch my ear that you might also have noticed. Upcoming seasons of Discovery, that, to my mind, very strongly hints at Discovery's fourth season, which we've discussed on this show in recent weeks as a distinct possibility. And in addition, we get an acknowledgement of the Section 31 show. We haven't learned much about the show since it was first announced in January of 2019, and we don't learn much here either, but to hear it mentioned by Kurtzman is an encouraging sign that the show has not been, as many on the internet have been speculating, shelved. Alex Kurtzman also confirms something we have long suspected, that Discovery Season 3 was scheduled to be released in the spring of this year, shortly after Picard Season 1 concluded, only to have those plans totally upended by the COVID-19 pandemic. But he does offer some hope for the future, indicating that plans are in motion to return the Star Trek shows to production. He said, everybody's working on that really diligently because everybody wants to get back to work and nobody wants to do it in a way that's unsafe. And what about more Short Treks? Well, Kurtzman said, thanks to the Emmy nomination, I'm really hoping there will be more. There are so many different forms that the shorts can take. I'd love to do a musical, for example. I'd love to do one in black and white and figure out what that means. So a pretty interesting and, as I say, wide-ranging view on what's going on in the Star Trek television universe at the moment. Homer, tell me, would you like to see more Short Treks? And how are you feeling about the prospect of a fourth season for Star Trek Discovery?
Well, first off, good ear listening about Discovery seasons there. Nicely done. I'm really excited. I think that the Short Treks are, as he put it, like a good way to experiment, try to push the boundaries of what Star Trek can be. And so it's kind of like the sandbox, you know, where he's figuring out some things that can work. Maybe it needs to be shorter. Maybe it can fit into the larger show itself. And I think that at least most of those Short Treks will find their way or be alluded to within some of the shows that are coming out. I have a feeling that Ephraim and Doc, I think it is, will eventually be linked to Lower Decks in some fashion or to Star Trek Prodigy. Maybe that's more likely. But I think that it's really cool that they can work on the short form. And to do that, I mean, it's 15 minutes, I think, max or something around there. So you have to have everything that you would have in a regular story. So you have to have your beginning, middle, end. You have to have your character development, all of that. So it has to be tight. The other thing that you mentioned about the writer's rooms working on Zoom, I would think that those scripts are going to be tight and they're going to be great because they've got this time, all this extra time that you wouldn't have on something where you're under the gun to get something done every couple of weeks or so. So I'm pretty excited about that aspect of things as well.
Yeah, this is not the first time that Kurtzman has sort of slyly kind of soft announced future seasons of shows before the official announcement came down. I recall at New York Comic Con last October, he basically just straight up said to Trekcore in an interview that yes, season 2 of Star Trek Picard was already sort of starting the development process, but the official announcement of the show's pickup didn't arrive until January of 2020. So, you know, who knows if that is sort of designed to push back on some of these rumors that quite persistently fly around the internet around the constant sort of cancellation of this show. But it's very encouraging to hear that, you know, they are already starting to work on season 4 of Star Trek Discovery at a script phase. And I think you're totally right. As much as this sort of whole situation we find ourselves in sucks really badly for everybody involved and it's just a really dreadful situation we find ourselves in terms of finding, you know, one possible silver lining, I think it has to be that these next seasons of Star Trek are getting a lot of development time, which in the script writing process, especially for a serialized show like these Star Trek shows are, Discovery, Picard, etc., having that extra time, not being under the gun, the ability to write a script and then write another script for another episode and then go back to the original script and change some stuff so it all lines up a little more seamlessly. You know, I really hope they're taking advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And then getting back to the Short Treks and the Emmy nomination, I think it's one, he knows what the Short Trek format and what they can do, and they're going to try to do new things with it. But also, if you have that kind of nomination, you're able to attract perhaps even more talent than you might be able to have attracted otherwise. So I'm really optimistic about what's coming down the pike for Short Treks. I mean, just thinking about it, he said, I think 50 different types or 50 different ideas or something like that, mentioning black and white and mentioning a musical, but there's more. I mean, there could be a Star Trek dance Short Trek, you know, or there could be something where it's silent film, you know, and it's all about the action of the characters, or maybe it's not even characters. Maybe it's something that's more like a 2001 and you have vehicles in space and you have kind of like that dance and you have the music that's really carrying the action there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's encouraging and exciting that they are talking about more Short Treks. I mean, these were originally just planned as not filler material, but as, you know, sort of teaser material in between season one and two and Discovery, because it was taking them longer to get season two ready than they wanted. And they wanted to put something out. And then, you know, they decided to do another set between season two and three of Discovery, sort of soft launching Strange New Worlds. So, you know, it would be really nice for them to do more of them. And I'm excited to hear that they are considering it, because it is very different and it is very new for Star Trek. But, you know, I think it's been a successful experiment so far and an easy one for them to play with form and content and bring new talent and new voices into the franchise as a whole. And there's nothing bad about that.
Absolutely.
Well, if that's the good news, here comes the bad news. This just in, the next Star Trek movie is still in limbo. Yes, it's been a while, but we're doing it again. We're talking Star Trek IV. After reports earlier this year that Paramount was focusing on a script developed by Legion creator Noah Hawley, news came this week that Hawley's Star Trek movie has been placed on hold, as the new leader of the Paramount Motion Picture Group, Emma Watts, has been tasked with figuring out the path forward for the next Star Trek film. According to Deadline, there are three paths forward that are under consideration. The first is the Hawley movie, though it has been reported that the script centers around a deadly pandemic that might not excite audiences given, well, everything that's happened so far in 2020. The second option is a return to the original Star Trek IV concept that was announced while Star Trek Beyond was in theaters, which would see the Kelvin timeline crew return alongside Chris Hemsworth. S.J. Clarkson had been tapped to direct the movie before it was shelved and she moved on to other projects, and Paramount seemingly moved on from the movie as well. But now, it seems, are considering a return. The last option currently under consideration by Watts is the script that was developed when Quentin Tarantino was deliberating about directing a Star Trek movie. Though Tarantino ultimately decided to pass and likely will not be directing, the script that was developed on his behalf by the Revenant screenwriter Mark L. Smith is said to be a viable option. That movie is reported to be, quote, earthbound in a 30s gangster setting, which is certainly an interesting approach. Homer, if you were Emma Watts, which of the three do you think you would choose?
Well, if the finances can work, I would do the one with Chris Hemsworth as Kirk's father. But realistic, I don't know if that's... It sounds as though all three of them are in equal running. But then again, I'd like to kind of revisit a piece of the action to see how things are after McCoy left behind his communicator, if that's where they're going.
That is a strange concept for a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, I don't know if it actually is viable as a 120-minute movie. That seems a little crazy to me. It seems more like an episode.
Yeah, who knows what's going on there? But, you know, who knows what's going on in the mind of Quentin Tarantino? I suppose that's what happens when you're an auteur like he is, right? You have a lot of ideas. Some of them are genius and some of them maybe are not. And, you know, who knows with this one whether it would ultimately turn out to have been a genius idea or a catastrophic mistake. I have to say, you know, from the initial description of it, which is literally six words, you know, we don't know a ton about it, but it's sort of, I don't know, I'm throwing it quite a significant amount of side eye.
Yeah. And then the pandemic, I think it would depend on how it was done. It can't be what we have now. It would have to be something like more about zombies or something, I think.
So that's an interesting one. I mean, Hawley said he had a, you know, a new and fresh take on Star Trek. And I mean, that was February. So, you know, at least in America at that point, there was no pandemic. So that just might be a case of bad timing, really. Yeah. Again, who knows? I mean, you know, none of these story details might be accurate. I mean, I think I agree with you. Based on the short descriptions of the three of them, I think the original Star Trek IV idea is maybe the one that I'm most interested in. But, you know, who knows? I mean, it sure doesn't speak all that well of Paramount that here we are 4 years and 2 months after the release of Star Trek Beyond, and they still can't figure out what their next steps are for the Star Trek movie franchise.
Yeah, and I'm not going to worry about it too much, because at least for the near future, sure, I'm going to be pretty well set as far as Star Trek goes.
Right, and that's the thing. And I've said this on other episodes, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But you know, one of the things I've been struggling with in sort of getting excited about or even too disappointed about a new Star Trek movie, either happening or not happening, is they are pouring so much money into the TV shows that you really are getting a cinematic experience on television.
Yeah.
You know, like the sort of comparison that keeps popping up in my mind is in the 1990s, you had the Battle of Wolf 359 in the Best of Both Worlds, a battle you never saw, you just saw the outcome of. And then in the 1996 movie, Star Trek First Contact, you've got the Battle of Sector 001, where you get way more effects, way bigger kind of budget, you know, ships all flying around, all kinds of new ships. You know, that was the difference between TV and movies in the 1990s, is one of them doesn't have the budget for that kind of spectacle, one of them does. But compare the space battle from the season 2 finale of Discovery to any of the space battles in any of the movies, and they are in many ways quite comparable.
Absolutely. I mean, that battle was amazing. So many ships, and it lasted for such a while, and there's so many ebbs and flows to it. Yeah, that was really well done. I 100% agree.
I mean, I think, you know, Star Trek movies sort of serve a role of providing us with the opportunity to expose new people to the franchise. And, you know, I guess there are different storytelling opportunities with movies that you don't have with television. But, you know, I mean, you know, in some ways it's deeply frustrating that they've not put the next movie into production. In other ways, you know, part of me is also like, you know, no, take the time to figure it out. I mean, Star Trek movies are a difficult equation to sort of solve, and they should do something to try and solve it, honestly.
Yeah, they should take their time and do it right.
Star Trek Prodigy, the second animated Star Trek show in production that will premiere exclusively on Nickelodeon next year, announced this week a new addition to the show's creative team. Joining series creators and executive producers Kevin and Dan Hagerman is Ben Hibben, who will serve as the series director, co-executive producer, and creative lead as the show moves out of the writer's room and into the animation studio. The work for which Hibben is best known is serving as the animation director for the Three Brothers sequence in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, which earned him an Oscar nomination. Homer, if Ben Hibben called you up for advice about what you'd like to see in the next Star Trek show, what would you tell him?
For Star Trek Prodigy?
Yeah.
In the clips that I saw, I think there's a bird flying by. So he needs to have a bird, or I think maybe this is his trademark and it should be a ship that's flying by. And it helps you to follow the action. So where that ship is maybe going to be in the sky, we'll be following action below or in some fashion through it. So it's a way in to the world that's not just us looking through the eyes of a camera. It's kind of like the reference point. Now, that's just kind of like off the cuff, having looked at the clip. I mean, this guy can certainly tell a story. I just don't know from what I've seen that it's the same age group as the Nickelodeon viewers. So I'd like to see some of his stuff or maybe Harry Potter is the same demographic, in which case, you know, I need to watch more Nickelodeon, I guess.
I know the sequence in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 because I've seen the movie a bunch of times. It's a very, you know, sort of powerful and affecting sequence in that movie. But I mean, I've not seen really anything else that he's done. But the rest of the creative team attached to the show, including a number of people in the writer's room, like the Benson sisters, for example, have posted about how excited they are to work with Ben and how much kind of respect he has in the animation community. So, you know, fingers crossed this is
right,
exciting and heralds good things for Star Trek Prodigy ahead.
Yeah, I think it does. I just don't know a lot about his work, but just hearing that there's excitement in the writer's room to be working with him gives me I'm more excited about Star Trek Prodigy having heard that.
Absolutely.
Well, just one thing on Star Trek Prodigy. We haven't seen a single cell as of yet. Like, we don't know the look or anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've seen the logo and know that it follows a lawless group of teens who find a derelict Starfleet ship and use it to travel the galaxy in search of meaning and something, if I remember the description correctly.
Yeah. And I like the idea. What I'm hoping is that ship kind of becomes one of the characters as well.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. And I mean, you know, ships are so important to Star Trek that hopefully it's something they put a lot of thought into. They certainly put a lot of thought into the design for the USS Cerritos on Lower Decks. That's certainly been the case, I think.
Yeah, I love that. I've been looking for the soundtrack and I haven't been able to find it yet on iTunes, but I do love the song as well that introduces the Cerritos.
Oh, I'm sure it is only a matter of time before that is released, for sure. And lastly, if you're a Star Trek fan who enjoys the occasional tipple, Hero Collector have the book for you. Star Trek Cocktails by Glenn Dakin, which will be released in November, contains a collection of cocktail recipes for drinks inspired by the Star Trek universe. A few of the drink selections you can make from the book include Kirk's Old Fashioned, Jean-Luc's Grey Martini, and the Live Long and Prosper. The idea of Star Trek themed cocktails might seem strange to some, but they actually have a long lineage among Star Trek fans. Star Trek The Experience was renowned for its Star Trek themed cocktails, including the very powerful Warp Core Breach that would absolutely knock your socks off, and I can speak from experience about that. In addition, at STLV every year, the bars and restaurants at the Rio Hotel have served Star Trek themed cocktails. Homer, what do you think about this release? Do you think you'll be sampling any of the recipes contained in this book?
I think I'll be too curious not to. Honestly, having looked at the first off, Hero Collector is going to do a high quality book. So it's not something that you're necessarily going to want to get spilled gin on or something like that. So you should take care of your book. Hopefully it's not too big to fit in the kitchen too, which is where my liquor is located. But having looked at a couple of the recipes, these are accessible. In that it's not, they don't seem to have these exotic, hard to find ingredients. So it should be fairly easy to, for example, make Kirk's Old Fashioned or make the Odo. Well, actually, they don't list the ingredients there, but the Odo's Chameleon. So I'm not a big buyer of cocktail books. I think I have two, but I will be ordering this, so I will have three. And this one will be fun, and some of my friends will appreciate it and some won't care.
Yeah, this is a fun one. Part of me is hoping that they include the recipe for the Warp Core Breach from Star Trek The Experience. I remember when it closed, there was a lot of interest from fans in what exactly went into it, and I think the recipe was being passed around online. Basically, it was like all the kinds of rum, you know, that you can get your hands on. It was like five or six different kinds of rum, and it was mixed together in this big, basically looked like a fishbowl. It was supposed to be for like 3-4 people, but it was super popular at The Experience anytime, you know, there were people there at the bar. But yeah, I think this is fun. And it's, you know, it's always nice to get something that's a little bit different. And, you know, Star Trek themed cocktail book that's about making actual cocktails that have a Star Trek theme to them is certainly, you know, pretty cool and exciting.
Yeah. And the pictures and the color, like it really looks nice just in and of itself, not even looking at the words, just the photography or the illustrations that go with it. Question for you, was the Warp Core Breach, was it blue? I'd like to know more about it.
Yeah, it was blue. It was served in this like fishbowl. The Experience had bought these like crazy, like big glasses that had these little stands with them. And so it was served in this, basically in this fishbowl. I mean, as I say, it was like, it's been years since I saw the recipe. I actually think I have it saved on my computer somewhere. It was like Bacardi 451. And then like, you know, a bunch of the different Bacardis, and it was topped off with dry ice. So it was served like smoking in this fishbowl with like a bunch of straws sticking out of it. And I only got to the Experience once, but as part of being there, I did partake of at least one Warp Core Breach with some new friends that I made. And I don't remember much of the rest of the evening, to be quite frank with you.
Wow. Yeah. If you find that, I would be curious to see it. I don't know that I'll actually make it for myself, but I am curious about it.
I think I've got it here somewhere. I'll have a look and share it with you.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So each week, I and my guest give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about Lower Decks, Picard, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, the future of the franchise, merchandise, whatever we want. So Homer, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
It's a theory, Morrison. I don't know when Picard comes back for us, but I have to think that, so he's an android, essentially. And so how is he going to adjust, and will it be something that's publicly known? I think so. And then it's how will other people react to him? So will there be this sort of, I guess you could call it androidism or racism, really? Will he experience that, and will he take that experience to help to further free the androids? Or maybe they've kind of finished up with that thread and they want to move on to something else, you know, something to do with, say, Romulus. I'm not sure. I'm really curious to see how they start off the first episode of season two.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly, you know, it was certainly one of the more out of left field story decisions for Picard season one. At the time, I was sort of like, I'm not sure I particularly like this. The longer I've had to sit with it, having gone back and rewatched the season again, I think the more okay I am with it. But yeah, I'm really interested to see what they decide to do with it. I mean, they made this sort of quite big decision to effectively kill and then resurrect Jean-Luc Picard. I mean, that's not something you do lightly. And it feels like, you know, there should be some kind of exploration of the fallout from that. I personally have no idea, you know, what I want that to be. And so, you know, I'm sort of willing to let the show kind of take me where it wants to go. I think the thing I don't really want is for them, now that they've done it, to just sort of sweep it under the carpet and never reference it again. Because if that's the case, like, why did you bother doing it in the first place?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with this type of storytelling, so that it's serialized instead of episodic, I don't think they can sweep it under, or they certainly shouldn't. It's not like we're going from one episode of TNG to the next.
Right. It shouldn't be the inner light, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You've got this entire world, this entire culture in your head, and you play your flute maybe two times after that.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry. Maybe three.
A little more. You know, a little more exploration of the implications of this massive change, I think, would certainly be warranted. And I think it's the kind of thing they will do. As I say, I have no idea how they're going to do it, which is also exciting because, you know, it's no fun to know where a show's going before you've even watched it.
Yeah, they're doing a good job there. That's for sure.
Yeah, they sure are.
They're keeping us guessing.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
So I'm really, really excited about what's coming up. You know, 21 more weeks straight of Star Trek is just, wow. I mean, have we had 21 weeks straight since Enterprise?
I don't think we've had 21 weeks straight ever, because even back during the Deep Space Nine Voyager Enterprise era, they wouldn't play 26 consecutively. You would still have breaks for holidays, and, you know, they would kind of sort of move things around and create breaks in the schedule. Just like if you're watching any like network TV show right now, they don't play them on 26 consecutive weeks. So I think this is new for Star Trek for sure.
That's pretty exciting.
Well, my theory this week is a silly one, and it pertains to Star Trek Lower Decks. I think that Lower Decks will tell us what a self-sealing stem bolt does. So I was watching Envoys, the most recent episode, and revisiting the pilot episode, Second Contact. This show loves its references, right? Its references to previous Star Trek. I mean, Envoys is just chock full of them. So many that, And some which are so deep that it's sort of tough to kind of, it's tough to keep up. It's tough for me to keep up. And I'm, you know, one of those people who like prides himself on being the guy who picks out a lot of this stuff through the Canon Connections articles that I've done since Discovery premiered. And the show also does seem like it likes to kind of acknowledge some of the silliness about previous Star Trek shows. And there is nothing sillier as far as Star Trek Deep Space Nine is concerned than the self-sealing stem bolt. This tool or whatever it is that came up multiple times across all these episodes of the show, but nobody ever bothered to say what it was, other than the general sense that, like, it was sort of a worthless piece of machinery. So I would love for, in Lower Decks there to be a reference to the self-sealing stem bolt and for a character to finally tell us what it does? What do you think about that?
Ow, I would love that. I think it has to be, I don't even want to speculate as to which character or how it would come up. I just want to be surprised. I hope you're right.
Yeah, again, it's me too. Like, I don't want to know. I would just like them to do it. It just seems like a fun thing. That would be perfectly in tone for this show.
Yeah, it totally would.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Homer Frizzell, for joining me today. Homer, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
People could Google my name and they could find me, but also I'm on Twitter at Frizzell, FRIZZELL.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Homer. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.